everyone, and welcome back to another Camera Creations podcast. This is number 8, and it's the 8th of October. I'm joined today by Ian Bundy and Chris. Have you noticed, Chris, that your initials are the same initials as the show? It's CC at CC.
Perfect. Yeah,
Everyone else is having the week off or fortnight off for various reasons, so it's just the three of us. If it's a shorter show, then you'll know why, but we'll plow on anyway. The theme of this show is supposed to be what we do with our photos. So in other words, we take them and then what happens after that. So that's a interesting topic for later on. In the meantime, we'll just head straight into the kind of news with Chris, and some have a look at what people have been doing in the last fortnight. Just a reminder that the website is now at tedsalmon.com/camera creations. And most of the stuff that goes on in terms of content is filtered through the MeWe group. So do join us in the MeWe group if you would like to do that. There's also a Camera Creations shared Google Photos album, which has got the stuff in it that we're going to talk about on the show today. So when you follow along in your podcast, you'll be able to jump into that album and have a look at what we're talking about. And if you get lost with any of that, tedsalmon.com is my homepage, where you'll find links to all the audio podcasts and all the other MeWe groups that we're involved in. So there. Let's start with some feedback from the last fortnight then. Ian, what have you been up to?
Thanks, Ted. As we're in this, what do we do with our photos? I thought I'd take that very seriously and not go out and take any pictures. So I've been quite sort of jealous of Chris going out and shooting. The few weeks beforehand was super busy for me. So it was just basically playing catch up on that. So quiet for me for shooting, but it's given me some time to look at some of the stuff that I was looking at doing anyway regarding some of the content that I had. So one thing that came up was that I sold a couple of prints of a concert I had a photo pass for, which was Gary Newman's 1,000th live show, which was quite an epic event. And also he's just releasing a live album of that gig. So there's a lot of talk about there's certain forums. It must be quite a small thing regarding the whole world of music, but there's been a lot of interest regarding the concert. So sold a couple of prints on there. I put one in there again. I was lucky enough Gary signed a number of them as well. So it was something that's been sitting in a box for a while, so it was a therapy thing to get rid of some prints as well. So that was the sort of the first thing I did sort of
Ian, was he really impressed with the photo when he saw that? He must have kind of, when he sat down to sign them, he must have said, wow, this is brilliant, didn't he?
Well, funny you should say that. Yeah, I mean, he's I've met him quite a few times. I'm not like a super fan, but again, any time he tours, I try to go to it, and it was probably the pinnacle of my photography career was managing to get a photo pass for that gig. So for me, being in the pit and being in front of everybody and shooting just for three, you get three numbers basically that you can shoot for, and then you're ushered out. But it was a real a pinch me moment for me to be in that position. So, but he was very gracious. I did use one of those prints from the gig as well as part of my licensure for the Royal Photography Society as well. So it gave me a lot of content from the gig as well. So that was quite good.
Well, maybe he's so used to this kind of thing going on that he just doesn't bat an eyelid. He just assumes that people in that situation like you are obviously going to get brilliant photos.
Yeah, well, maybe, but the one that was in the folder is actually one I took later on, which was from the back of the room, which was more around the atmosphere of the gig rather than sort of close-up photos of him. So,
okay.
But fair dues for him. He's like a 67-year-old guy headbanging his way around a concert and has got more life in him than I have. So fair dues to the guy. So, so yeah, that was managed to get rid of some prints, which was great. Also, probably go into later that I'm part of a camera club, which they meet every Wednesday, I think the first week of every Wednesday or something like that. I never managed to get to many of the meetings, but what I do find is useful to submit images into the competitions, just to get feedback, because they have, I think, six competitions a year. And you can submit images, and they're judged by a proper judge. So you get some very good feedback. So I try and submit those when I can. It's coming up for the annuals competition, so you can submit three images. So I've been looking at the last week of submitting some images. So there was one from Silverstone I took a few weeks back that I'd had some positive feedback on, and I'd already submitted to a competition as well that got good feedback. So I submitted that one. Plus I've had a play around with it.
Can you, for people on the podcast, can you describe when they go to try and see which one you're talking about? Can you just describe which one it is? Is the one with the red bits on the car, is it?
Yeah. So I called it Gloomy Sunday because it was throwing it down with rain at Silverstone. But I had quite an artistic edit on it. And I submitted it to some groups as well, which got some feedback, because a lot of these Facebook groups or photography groups, you can submit something and you may not get much back. But this one got quite a lot of positive feedback, so I thought it was useful to put into the competition. So that was one from the end of the straight. It was raining. It was really gloomy Sunday afternoon. So
that great was atmosphere. That's superb. Yeah. I love that.
So I was super happy with that. There was an image I got a few weeks back in Baku of Max Verstappen. I've been trying to get some shot like that for a while. I was super happy with that. And I think I submitted it. I put it into Camera Creations, but I've had a little bit of a play with the edit on it. So I've tweaked that a little bit. Nothing too outrageous, but just tied it up a little bit.
That's the one that we spoke about last time with his eye in the helmet.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's okay. Right.
Yeah, it's a cracking image, that one, Ian. It's really, really good.
I was yeah, super happy with that. And again, it's amazing just going through some different edits and then finding different. I've got a number of different filters and stuff I've got in Lightroom that play around with, but it's pretty much like it was out of the camera for the colors and everything. So nothing major done to it, just sort of tweaked it so the Verstappen thing is more lined up with the actual image itself, the text. And the final one was, again, I think one we talked about last time, managed to get out and completely fail to shoot the supermoon, but got a really nice sunset shot.
That's the one with the guy sitting on the bench, is it?
Yeah. So those are images that we've... I think majority we went through last time, but again, for putting into this annuals competition, I thought that would be a good selection because of the audience isn't a motorsport audience or anything like that. So I try to balance it that it's not just another car going around a corner sort of.
Is this a local camera club you're part of, Ian?
Yes, it's Bungie, which is... a town it's about 20 minutes away from us. My stepfather is in it, so he was one of the ones who got me into photography and taught me about the exposure triangle and things like that. So I found it was really useful as a starting out, especially going from phones to camera, and seeing the difference. It was really useful, but as I say, I probably use it mainly for getting some really honest feedback. It's we'll go into it later about where we put stuff, but getting feedback from a judge rather than how many likes you get on an image is so much more useful, I think. But
yeah, someone that knows what they're talking about.
Exactly.
I've looked at the because Brighton have quite a big camera club, but I think it's too big. I think that's the issue, and they seem quite straight-laced, and if you join it, you've got to join like a sub-league of their camera club, and you're not allowed to the meetings until you do all this and that. So I just thought, it's not really the spirit of photography, you know, and they want you to take street photos or this kind of photo, and it all seems quite prescriptive and a bit too regimented, so I never really followed it through. But I like the idea of joining a club, but I don't want to be told what I had to take pictures of.
It is a little bit like that, and it's a little bit. It's what you would imagine. What you would imagine a camera club in a village to be, of retired people, quite clicky and things like that. But I find it really useful for getting some feedback. And as I say, I don't really go that often, but when there's a you have this concept of a triptych of having three images together and building one image out of three and things like that, it's quite good to give you a project to do or something to do an edit for. So I think it gives me a bit of guidance without actually having to go to every meeting, to be honest. So
I guess there's not much they can say, though, if you're turning up with pictures of Max Verstappen and they've got, you know, pictures of Bungay Town Centre.
Exactly. That's I mean,
what are they going to criticise you for?
That's it. But I was brought down to earth that they... and again, it sounds bizarre. They have competitions between different camera clubs. So there's the Lowestoft one, Beckles and Bungay, and they have a three-way competition and everyone submits an image. And I went to it because I actually went to the meeting and reviewed the images because it was in Lowestoft, and the judge tore my picture to pieces, which was
really
and it was
I've got, you know, what picture was it?
Yeah, it was the one that you should never get too big for your boots, I think. It was the one that got onto the front page of the Financial Times.
So from the Mexican Grand Prix, that one.
Yeah, and I was super proud of it. Everyone has told me, has seen it. I put it into two exhibitions. People have bought it, and the camera judge went, it's so distracting behind it. It's ruining it. And once she told me, it's like, you're 100% right. It's like, oh my God, how did I not see that before? And now I've blacked out the background, which had a lot of distraction in it. But that feedback, after being initially heartbroken, it was really super useful for someone to go, have you not noticed this? And then go, oh my God, yes, you're right. And that's, again, one of the reasons why you put it in, that again, it gives you a different point of view of your image. So
I suppose you have to have a kind of a thick skin. I'll be tempted just to say, how many pictures have you got on the front of the Financial Times?
that's what it would be. And I found it really, really useful. And maybe as another thing to do, I don't know if you thought about it, but the Royal Photography Society, you can do different gradings. So I did my Ascension, so you put in 10 images that are supposed to make up one image. It took me 2 years to do that, just to build a panel of images, and you pay for someone to review them before you submit them. And it was, it's really quite brutal. You get attached to your images, and it's nice when someone hasn't got that attachment or hasn't been in that place where it took the picture and has got all the backstory. They're just looking at the image. I would recommend it, and as I say, it's definitely helped me grow as a photographer, I think. But or not think that I'm good. It's always this grounding of yeah, but you could do better sort of thing.
Yeah. Hmm. It's something that, yeah, I think I could probably benefit from, but I don't want to be, I don't want to pay people for the privilege.
No, I get that. I get that. But it's quite good. And I think as a project to what you, again, what you do with your images, I think it's for putting them into a panel, and I had to have them printed off, and when they're reviewed, you can actually go down in person to Bristol and see them actually review it, and they review them up on the wall. I did it by Zoom, and I think it's the scariest thing I've ever done in my life, of seeing your images up them, and then you have five judges critique them.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. And you're just worried that, they're going to go, no. It's like, and yeah, that was the best and worst experience.
Mm. I'm not sure you're selling it, but I think
I'm not at all, no.
At the other end of it, I guess that you kind of find it worthwhile. But, and it's good to have a reason to take pictures and something to aim for, so I think that'd be a benefit as well.
I think having purpose, I think that's the thing that maybe stops me getting out and having that plan of getting out to take a shot and stuff. And it's quite easy to not do that, or I've got nothing to shoot, where everyone's got something to shoot around the corner that's interesting. So, but yeah. So off on a tangent slightly, but so I've been editing images, and what I find, I don't know about you, Chris, or you, Ted, that when I start going in, I go back to some other images and stuff that I haven't touched, and images I took from Japan last year that I did a couple of edits on. There was Himeji Castle I went to, and unfortunately it wasn't in blossom season, and the picture was really quite flat. And I tried to have a little bit of an edit on that today to bring out the bridge in red. It's quite an iconic castle. And again, in blossom season, there are some really epic pictures there. But you do what you can while you have that environment, I think. So
I like the edit. I will say that's a very Instagram-friendly edit, isn't it? The orange and teal.
I was looking for a certain filters to put onto it, and then just had a base and then played around with it. But yeah, I did have a night one of that as well. I think I put that in the folder, but again, it was an image I took, or the series of images I took last year that I'd never revisited. I'd never even edited. So they'd been just sitting there in Lightroom, and I thought I'd have a punt at trying to do one.
I quite like the light, the orange light coming in from the left. Presumably that's a low setting sun or a rising sun, throwing the middle bit of the image into a kind of orangey glow, which I can see why you might prefer it to be all blossomy, but that actually is quite a nice effect, I think.
I think it was quite harsh conditions. We got there late afternoon, and this is the Instagram spot, basically, that where you get the shot. And again, if it is blossom or coming into night, they light up the castle. Again, it was just an opportunity. I get stuck, and then I lose a few hours stuck in Lightroom. I go, oh my God, what have I done? I haven't done all these other things because I've been messing with a photograph and spend an hour on it or something. So I find it is probably therapeutic, but also it's something that whiles away the hours as well. So
very nice.
Wait till you start getting into Photoshop, Ian, and then it'll be
I really wish I had I wish I had the skills, and I find that I learn how to do something and then I forget it because I don't use it again and then have to relearn it. But I think Lightroom at the moment is and maybe the odd bit into Photoshop. I find the correction in Photoshop is probably better than Lightroom. But
I'm fascinated to find out about the next one, which is a female form with all sorts of stuff going on. Presumably a model, is it? Or is it a statue?
So this is something I've been sitting on for a long time. It was actually taken, there's a place in Nottingham called Tank Space. So it is, I think, the biggest tank of water, and it's used for photography. So I've been there a couple of occasions where you have people in the water. So you have models in the water.
Oh, right.
And you wow. can take the photographs from that perspective. So you get that, the nature of the silk that she had with her, again, in the water, it has a really nice effect in it. I will put into the other group, the folder, the edits, because you can see that to me it's quite clean. But if you look at it unedited, the water bubbles that are all over that, I think there's probably thousands. So the edit on that has taken probably years to get rid of all of the little bits. I will try and dig it out and put it in the folder. But it was. But again, I think something interesting, because it's not something you see every day. But it was this company called Timeline Events that do photography day trips and bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is going to shoot trains and stuff, which I'm not interested in, but this seemed quite interesting. So there was one guy and two girls that would go into the tank, and you would shoot that. And it was, again, as a something that I would have never shot before, it was quite an interesting sort of experience.
It's lovely. It's a beautiful image, I think. And I shall be fascinated to see the one with the bubbles as well.
While Chris is talking or something, I'll dig it out and put it in the folder. It's a major embarrassment, I must confess. But yeah, that was something, again, that once you start digging into Lightroom and then, I found this picture. What if I can do this, and this to it now? And yeah, I lose another hour. So, And the last one was another one from Japan. This was from Nara. They have the bowing deer. And again, haven't edited any of those photos from last year. And I had a play with the edit on this one. I thought it was quite interesting between the deer, between the two pieces of the shrine. So I quite like that one.
You put the animal there, did you?
No, I didn't. They're very tame. It's this massive park in Nara, which is just, I think, south of Kyoto. And they have these famous bowing deer. You come up to them and they bow.
Oh, right.
And you give them crackers, basically. So they're throughout the park. I never knew anything about it until I went there, but they're well renowned as the bowing deer. But yeah, so it was just that, again, finding an image that I hadn't touched for a long time and seeing if I could do something with it. So
just going to say, you've nailed the greens. Greens are always the colour that's the hardest to sort of kind of look natural but artistic at the same time, and you've really, I think you've nailed it. Is that on the colour mixer that you've shifted the colours there, or is that?
I start off with a base profile and then just tweak and just try to make it a little bit warmer than it was originally as well.
You shift the green to the yellows a little bit.
To give it a bit more of a glow. But I like the idea, again, the deer is sort of looking straight at me in between the two pillars.
Yeah, it works really well.
So that was really me. So rather than going out taking photos, I was rehashing old ones and probably taking too much time. So that was basically my 2 weeks. Apart from that, a couple of my images, probably my least impressive images from Baku ended up online. So I just posted one of those in there. So just it's always nice to see you getting a credit somewhere. The agency never tells me if an image has been sold or anything like that. But it's normally you could do a Google search and then you'll find something which has your name on it, and you go, oh, it's been sold there. But they don't make an awful lot of money on the images themselves, but for publications. But it's nice to have that as part of your, I guess, if you want to get credentials and things like that, you can see that you've had sort of postings online.
So you never see any of the money or anything that gets made from the photos that you take once you've sort of handed them over?
No. And to be honest with you, I had a quick look at this, the agencies, and they're probably, this image here, they, Liam Norson, again, this isn't the best image at all. And I took another one of one of the other drivers, Oscar Piastri, which was probably the worst picture I took all weekend. And I found that online. And they probably sell for, let's say, $29. So for what the agency gets from that image is peanuts. So back to my claim to fame of the Financial Times, it took someone to actually email me to ask for a copy of the print that they'd seen it on the front page and wanted. And I thought it was a scam. That someone emails you and said, I've seen your picture online, I would like to buy it, please. And it's like, this is a scam. And it was on the front page of a paper. Like, yeah, right. And it actually was, but I knew nothing about it, and the agency knew nothing about it. So
that's interesting.
Some of these agencies,
kind of cool, but kind of sad as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit. But
some of these agencies also, I think, behave badly. And I tell you what, I've got some first-hand experience with this, because I'm the editor of a local magazine, and I used an image which I shouldn't have done. I nicked it from online on Google Images, and it was years ago. It must have been 10 years ago. Some agency has done a reverse image search and tracked it down, and then sent me a bill for £90. As if you pay up the £90, you've used our image illegally and immorally. You've just stolen our artist's image. And technically they were right. I had done that. I'd completely forgotten about it, and I didn't purposely go out to con them. It's just that I didn't have the infrastructure to know what to do about that. And so we decided, the team at the magazine, we decided that we would pay the £90, having researched it quite a lot to see if people actually do get taken to court for it. And apparently it's a bit kind of, it's unlikely that they would take you to court for £90, but it can happen. And so, you know, that's my only experience really with these agencies. And as a result of that, in case over the last 21 years I had done the same with another image inappropriately, I took them all off the website. I just removed them because I thought this Google reverse image search is just going to go nuts, and I can't guarantee that I haven't done the same with another image somewhere else, and this could end up costing us a fortune, a magazine every month for 21 years.
Yeah,
I probably just I got think one 16-year-old doing reverse image searches, trying to track down.
Yeah, I think as people would be happy if they got a credit. I think that's the, from my perspective, I'm happy for people to use the image, but as long as there's a credit on there to me. But as say, you should be able to see the copyright details in all of the EXIF data anyway. So.
Yep. Well, I had done wrong, and it's a shame because it's a shame because all of those copies now are not available to people, and sometimes they want to look at the historic copies of it, but I don't dare put them back on the website. Anyway, back to you, Ian. Anything else?
No, that's about it. But say the final thing, I have put the image in the show notes, and I put it in the group of the original one of the images with all of the edits on the top, just taking the screenshot of it, just to see how much editing I've done on the image.
What, the bubbles one?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I'll look for that. It's not popped up yet, but I will.
It's in the show notes, but I'll pop it in the folder.
Oh, okay. It's in the show notes.
I see that.
God, oh, I see. Good grief.
Exactly. So it's not a straight from the camera shot, I must confess.
I thought we were going to see the same picture, but with lots of bubbles, not with your editing icons all over it.
How much RAM has your computer got to deal with that? That's quite funny. That's a weapon in itself, that is, Ian.
Thank you. That's me rehashing old images and editing this week. So
yeah, do put those in the album so people can see what we're talking about. Thanks, Ian.
Yep, will do.
Chris.
Hello. So I've been patrolling my local area, as per usual, no exotic. I did get one image that I'm really, really happy with, so I'll start with that on a high note. Probably one of the first keepers I've had for a few months, something that I put on my website. This is an image that I took on the South Downs. It's quite a well-known spot, this. We just call it the Dew Pond. It's on the South Downs walking trail. It's a very photogenic kind of small pond, and it's got like a windswept tree that overlooks it, so you get a really nice reflection. It's a nice composition itself, but it always needs something else, whether it be people or animals. So I had a chance to get up there for a sunrise last week, or the week before. It was still dark when I commenced the mile uphill walk to get there. So I was hoping for sheep. I didn't want cows, because I had a run-in with a cow a couple of years back, charged at me, and it was quite scary. I'm a bit of a wimp. So I was most gratified to approach the field and see probably 100 or 200 sleeping sheep, which was kind of intimidating in its own way, but I entered. And when I got to the pond, the sheep were kind of woken up and shuffled about. They were friendly enough. And they kind of just let me sort of move around this pond as the sun came up. And I probably took about 200 photos around this pond over the space of around half an hour. And I picked out one, which is probably my favourite. It's definitely going to be one that I'm going to print out. We're doing a bit of redecorating here, but it's going to go up on the wall, I think. I think it's just a very pleasing, kind of inoffensive, everyone's going to like it kind of landscape photograph. I've got the pond, I've got the reflection, and I've got a trail of 5 sheep kind of walking across the frame. I have put the before edit in the group. That was straight out of camera. You can see that on the Google group, the white balance is very, very blue.
Oh, yeah.
The Sony's picked out, does that quite a lot. It goes far too cold. So I've warmed it up. I've added a little bit of magenta, cropped it 16:9. And apart from that, there's nothing drastic, but I have done quite a few kind of local adjustments. You can see around the sheep, I've kind of raised the shadows, I've warmed up the light, I've added a little bit of warmth to the left of the frame where the sun was coming up, and that was the majority of the colour grading. I did throw it into Photoshop and I applied what they call the Alton effect, which is kind of adds a glow to the image, and it softens the contrast slightly. Quite subtle, but that is a good thing to do with landscape images in Photoshop. Worth looking at if you're kind of starting your editing journey. And I also kind of removed all the sort of branches and twigs from the pond. If you look in that before image, you'll see there's quite a few bits of sort of little sticks that are quite distracting. I've taken all those out as well. Mm-hmm. And left with an image that I'm really happy with. I don't know what you guys think. It's not perfect. The sky is a little bit messy. The bottom left shadow of the cloud, the reflection is a bit too dark, so I might lighten that up. But and also I've got 5 sheep, 3 and 2. I'm thinking maybe I'll get rid of one and make it even. But
there's also on sheep 1 and 3 that they've got the back leg in action, haven't they?
Yeah, they were walking across the frame at the time.
Yeah, and everything, all the other legs are completely stationary. But do you think that looks a bit odd?
be honest, Ted, I haven't noticed until you picked it up. it would be easily fixed. So maybe I'll do that. Okay. Or maybe I'll do that. Yeah, you spotted that. I hadn't noticed that, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah. Go on, Ian.
I think it's one of those. It seems like one of those epic images of you've got everything together, and I can imagine if I was taking the shot, it's like, oh my god, I've got the light, and I've got this, and I've got the reflection, and the sheep. Oh my god, this is epic.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I don't know on where the rules say regarding even numbers, but I don't think it would be. I don't think it would work if you. If you were going to get rid of one from the left hand side, it would have to be the one of the pair, and I don't think that would work. But when you look at it more closely, you can see one of those sheep is looking at you as well, which is really cool. But yeah, I think it's one of those you get up at stupid o'clock in the morning to get the sunrise, and that's what you get back for getting up that time in the morning. So that's really cool.
I think the five sheep works really well, Chris. I think that's the right number, and they're nicely, almost randomly spaced as well. I think that element of the frame works really nicely for me, anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'll keep it then. We'll go with that. I will say that I know we talk about camera hardware a lot. The benefits of the A7R5 with the tilt screen. Absolutely essential for getting this shot, because I was kind of crouched on the edge of the pond and kind of leaning forward, and the camera was like right on above the water, so the tilt screen
articulating that you're having a go at me, aren't you?
Yeah, I just know that they have their uses. If you're crouching down on your knees, Ted, and you want to get in the water, then it's a lot easier to look down on the screen and sort of
understood.
Lay on the floor.
I understood.
but yeah, that was the highlight of my last couple of weeks. This picture I saw, it's gone on my website, and I think I'm going to print this. The only thing I'm not sure about is the crop. It's a 16:9, which works okay digitally, but for a print, I'm not too sure. The original is obviously 3:2, so I might play with that, but we'll see. What else have I got? I will just quickly mention the usual trip on a Saturday morning to the beach. I got a long exposure of the West Pier. That is in the group. I had a really nice sunrise. I am getting a bit bored of this photo. I've taken it 100 times. I know what the filter is going to look like after I've taken it, so I don't know why I keep going to take it, but I still do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just feel compelled that I sort of have to go out and get pictures every weekend. So, but it was a really nice purple sunrise, to be fair, and it's a nice image, but it's not anything that I haven't taken kind of 100 times before. A couple of years ago, when I first started doing these long exposures, I'd be sort of over the moon with that, and now I just kind of look at it and go, yeah, got that already. So I thought I'd quickly mention that to sort of see the
chappy.
I would be over the moon with that picture, I must confess. So yeah, but as you say, that you've got this abundance of riches of that image, and why wouldn't you shoot it again? Because it could be slightly different, but yeah.
Yeah. I also got out on a sunset evening to the east side of Brighton Beach.
Just before you leave that on, Chris, the chappie that's in the kayak or whatever it is, the canoe.
I'm just about to get onto that one.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were talking about that one.
I'm talking about the one that's at the bottom of the show notes, the long exposure of the West Pier, which is the old burnt-out pier with the purple sky.
The front-on one.
Oh, well, I was looking at the wrong one. Yeah. They're out of order. Do it in order.
I know. Sorry, I'm doing it in order when I took them. I don't know why.
Okay.
So we'll get into that one. Yeah, that was a sunset last week. Quick jaunt down to Brighton Beach, SA East Side, which is the lesser spotted side of Brighton Beach. Very kind of harsh sunset. I put them in the group, what I would consider kind of snapshots of a nice sunset. You see the starlings above the pier, and I've got the boat against the wind farm. The only picture I got that I was particularly happy with is this one that you referenced with the kayaks.
Kayaks. That's not the one I was talking about. But let's go to that one. Yeah.
The paddleboard and the kayak.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about first with the three kind of people. You've got the guy on the left.
Yeah,
and
right, okay.
Yeah, so this is... I was dancing around this guy for quite a long time. I think he was getting a bit weirded out. because he kept trying to get out of my way. And I was like, no, you're the person I need in the frame. Because I think he anchors the frame. He balances it out. And then I was sort of trying to balance out the two people in the water. You've got the kayak and you've got the paddleboarder. So you've got kind of a layer from back to front. But what I didn't like about this image was kind of how messy the water was, how harsh it was. So I kind of set about fixing that with quite a strong edit, I think you could say.
The Adamski effects, isn't it?
The Adamski effects, yeah. This is where you apply motion blur selectively to the image and you keep the subjects kind of in focus. I'm not sure what you guys think. I quite like it, but it is a very kind of harsh edit, very strong edit.
My concern is that the bloke in the paddle boat, or whatever it's called, the kayak, that looks completely right and natural, and the water around him is fine. But the feet of the bloke standing and the other bloke that's standing up on his board, the sea around those two look as though they're not, that they're still...
That's just my editing. I haven't masked it perfectly. If I was going to kind of put a lot of effort in, I would have sort of drawn it around. So that's just where I've done the edit around them, if you see what I mean.
Right, okay.
And it's left the original behind them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right, Ted. It's not perfectly masked.
And the original, which is underneath this one, I think, I don't know what Ian thinks, but I think I just prefer that no edits at all done by the looks of it, and it's much more natural. You can see all the water, the choppiness of the sea, and you know, there's lots to like about that you get lost, I think, in your edit.
Yeah, I do. I do like that image, but I just can't help myself. I just chuck him into Photoshop and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? But neither image for me is like, it's that amazing. So I'm not too bothered. You know, when it's these kind of images, I just sort of mess about and see what comes of it. For the images like the first one I spoke about, you know, I'll put way more effort into kind of making it more refined. Mm. But these ones, you know, I'm not going to spend hours on them because I don't think they're worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I also got the drone up on that evening. So just after the sun had come down, I flew the drone up. Probably my favourite image of the day is, I think I put it in the group, I have, is straight above these two kayakers.
Mm.
I quite like minimalism. I've been looking for an image like this for a while because I've seen kind of similar images that I've liked. So I kind of saw these two guys out in the sea and I quickly flew the drone right over their heads at, I think it was 30 meters. The colors are 100% fake. The sea was green and the kayaks were yellow in the original. So, but in my head, this was how the image was going to look when I took it. I thought, I want to make the sea blue. I want the orange because that's the color contrast. And I want to make the texture of the sea kind of crisp and like paper, and that's how it's come out. So I'm not sure what you think of me sort of altering the colors. I think it works well and it's not too obvious, but.
Is that the same kayaker?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But they had the same boats because you can see they got a yellow boat on that
image.
Because they're in a boat club or something.
Okay. I love that. I think it's a really lovely piece of art. Ian?
Yeah, I'm more taken by the next one. I could see the next one. You could see that in a gallery or something like that. I really like the overhead one of the swimming pool.
Okay.
I lead you into that one. I think for me, that is super epic. I really love that one.
All right, well, we'll get on to that one. We'll just say that I was about 30 metres over the kayaker's heads. They definitely heard the drone because one of them looked up. I think he's even looking up in his picture and waved, which will lead on to this next image because this is another top-down image of kind of a new swimming pool they've opened in Brighton called Sea Lanes. It's like a lane slap pool, which is an open air swimming pool. I've had this image for a while again, been meaning to get this straight down image of the swimming pool. It's got the perfect contrast. You've got the blue of the pool, you've got the orange of the stony beach right next to it. And I'm quite happy with it. I'm probably not as hot as you are, Ian, because it's the pitch quality isn't that great. The drone's kind of small sensors let itself down a bit there. I should have bracketed it and I didn't. And you can see that it's a little bit sort of noisy. But I did post this to the Brighton Reddit, which I post a lot of my images to. We'll probably speak about that later. And mostly positive feedback, as I normally do get on there. But I got quite a few naysayers suggesting that this was unethical, flying a drone over a swimming pool. Some comments, you know, accusing me of perverted behaviour. My favourite piece of constructive criticism was someone's just said drone wanker, which made me laugh. And I thought, well, fair enough.
You should get a T-shirt with that.
Yeah. But every time I take it off, get the T-shirt out. I kind of see his point in one way. This wasn't as low down as the kayak one. This was about 60 metres, I think, to get the whole pool in. And the swimmers themselves are, you know, pixels across. There's no way you can identify anybody. But, yeah, I don't know what you guys think of the ethics of flying a drone over a swimming pool. I'm open to both sides of that.
Ian?
I mean, I think because it's so far away, I don't think it's an issue. But I think you're always going to get people that are going to be negative because it's easier to do that. But, again, I think that I can see this being in, you could see this in a gallery or something like that, or as a collection of your drone shots. I think it's super good. I'll with you, maybe again, you haven't got 100% because of the sensor and everything and the detail that you probably want out of it. But I think it's a lovely image. I think, again, it sort of like stands out to me anyway. So I guess we're all different, but.
Yeah, I am conscious of it. I don't want to be an arsehole. I don't want to sort of annoy people. Mm. And when I do get the drone out, I sort of take it straight up high because they can be a bit noisy and then people don't know it's there. They can't hear it. But at the same time, I want to get the photo. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there is an issue with this whole privacy thing, I have to admit. I mean, I live, as you know, right next to the beach here. And one of the things I think about when I think about getting back into photography is doing what I used to do in central London, which was go and sit in Piccadilly Circus with a long lens and just people shoot. And I used to love doing that. But if I went down and did that on the beach here, I'd probably get arrested or at least clobbered by someone who thinks I'm taking pictures of their children or something. And you think to yourself, is it... Honestly, all joking aside, that's one of the reasons that stops me from wanting to get out there and start taking photos again, because that's the natural place for me to go. And I just, I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, people are way more touchy about it these days. They see everything as a threat. I don't really understand why, especially in public. And this swimming pool, it's surrounded, you can't see it, but it's glass fence around it. You can see straight in, and there's a bar to the right of that, a rooftop bar, which looks right down on top of it. So there's no expectation of privacy there at all. But one guy was really angry. I did link the Reddit post in the show notes.
But, yeah, I had a look at that earlier. But it's amazing how angry people get over something. It's like, wow. They can't have a lot going on in their lives if they get angry over something like that. So.
On the other hand, you know, the media is filled of crooked stories about odd people that have been behaving badly around children. And so, you know, you can see what the difficulty is. And the whole privacy angle is really tricky. I can remember in the 1980s, I went into this church in central London somewhere, St. Martin's in the Fields Church, wherever that is, And I can remember I had my camera and I really wanted to take this photograph of this street living person. He was sat in the corner of the church, and he was asleep, and he looked just so great to take a photograph of. So he was asleep, so I thought, well, it's not going to hurt him, and I stooped down to take the photograph, and he suddenly leapt out at me and shouted at me and told me to piss off, basically. And I learned that day that you can't just assume that you can take pictures of anyone, even if you can legally.
This is the thing.
You still got to, I should have said to him, "Can I take your photograph?" But he was asleep. And
that's not a street photo, then, is it? That's a portrait photo. I mean, it's if you're asking them, then it's totally different. You're going to get a totally different image, aren't you?
Yeah. Anyway, so that's probably a
whole episode you could make out of that conversation. But yeah, that was my 2 weeks. So, in the terms of getting that one image, very productive, super happy. The rest, just usual sort of stuff that I get. Nothing amazing, but okay nonetheless.
Very good. There was a discussion about the one with the three images and the pier. There was a discussion about people wanting to remove one or the other or both of those. Yeah. My view was that it would have looked better with the two boating people not there and just the guy standing there on the left. But then I think it was Ahmed said that he shouldn't be looking out of the frame. But I think those kind of rules are there to be broken. And I think without the two kayakers or the two boaters in there, to me, the image worked really nicely as well.
Yeah, I tried both variations. I think I prefer your one with just a guy and not the boaters because he's looking kind of towards the frame.
Yeah.
But as I say, I'm not too fast either way with this one, to be honest.
Very good. Okay, my 2 weeks have been the usual ones, trying to make myself get enthusiastic about taking photographs and equipment. A friend of mine told me, why don't you look? I said to him, I need to get Nikon, really, because I got a Nikon lens. He said, forget about that. Just get some new lenses. And he said that, why not look at a second-hand used body in the EOS 5D, the Canon EOS 5D range, basically the newer the better, because they're full frame, they're relatively cheap now, they're still really, really good, workhorses, semi kind of professional bodies. So I've been having a look at that now. I don't know anything about Canon. I know Ahmed, who we mentioned just now, he's got a Canon, I think 70D or something like that. This is a bit older than that. But in Wex, for example, I can get one of these for about 400 odd quid. And yes, I will need to factor in a lens with that, at least one lens. But I do quite like the look of the Canon. Never used one, don't know anything about Canon, and I will end up with a wasted Nikon lens. But, that's life. It does look nice, and I quite fancy it. So watch this space. We'll see where we go with that one.
I'm just looking at images of that now. It looks kind of like their new ones to me.
Does it?
Yeah. I like the ergonomics of the Canon. They look really kind of comfortable to use, even though they're quite big. Mm-hmm. But this ticks all your wish list, does it?
It does, every one of them. Oh, except possibly, I'm not sure how they do the high eye point viewfinder. Looking at the picture of the back of this 5D Mark III, there seems to be something in the middle of the viewfinder that looks like it might come out or drop down or something, which might mean it opens up to a bigger view for glasses wearers. I don't know. I'd need to look into that. But apart from it not being Nikon, I think it does tick all the boxes. And it's got that lovely big scroll wheel on the back, which Nikon doesn't have. And I always like those on the D range from Canon. Not that I know much about them, but there you go. So that's kind of on my radar now. Just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah.
But, right, okay. Rumours and news. Chris, tell us all about it.
Okay, well, luckily it's not much happening in the rumours and news section. Quick follow-up on the Sony A7 5. that we spoke about last time, Sony have since announced that there's going to be a Sony Alpha event in Barcelona next week on the 16th of October. So we are presuming that's going to be the proper announcement for the A7 5, but we shall see. But it looks like that is happening. So just a quick update on that. Mm-hmm. The only other rumor is a little trip into Fujiland. They are releasing the X-T30 Mark III. This will apparently have the last generation 26 megapixel X-Trans sensor. So I think that's the X-Trans 4. But the CPU will be the latest generation. I did put in the show notes here, because I'm not in the Fuji kind of market anymore, the Fuji lineup is absurdly numerous. I think that's the best way I can describe it, because I've got so many models off the top of my head. They've got this XT range, they've got the XC range, XM, XT, XS, XH, XV, XF, and the X100. And I've just got no idea which one it is for.
It's the Motorola of the camera world.
It's so confusing. Like, if you're going to buy a Fuji, basically, oh, the X Pro. I forgot about the X Pro as well. I wouldn't know where to start. I do know I wouldn't start with this one, even though it's supposed to be quite cheap. I say cheap, £1,100. It's going to have the last gen sensor. It will have tilt screen and EVF, which apparently some of the other ones don't. So it will have a it will have EVF at least, and we'll have the speed dials, which are the ones they put on top, you know, where you can adjust each thing independently. But there will be no IBIS, apparently, which for me, a £1,100 camera, especially a crop sensor camera with no IBIS, automatic deal breaker for me. I don't know what you guys think of the Fuji range, whether you're as confused by it as I am, but I don't think £1,100 is that cheap, and I don't think you should be making that many compromises if you're paying that.
I haven't looked at the Fuji cameras for about 10 years, to be honest. When I did, I kind of understood what was what, but probably you're right. 10 years later, it's all probably much more confusing. Do you know anything about the range, Ian?
No, to be honest, no. And from moving from Sony to Nikon, I'm determined not to try and do that again due to cost. And again, someone said to me this week, the best brand there is the brand you've got. So what I've got is what I'm keeping at the moment. So I wouldn't be, say, the only thing I'm potentially in a market for is a smaller camera, because the Z8 is just too big to take out. So I'm still looking for that pocketable camera, and if it can take the Nikon lenses, then that would be good. So but not for me, for Fuji, I must confess.
No. Agreed. I'll just also mention that alongside this camera, they will release a new lens, the XC is their budget range. This is the XC 13 to 33 variable aperture 3.5 to 6.3. That is a in full frame equivalence, I think 20 mil to 50 mil. This sounds a bit crap. A variable aperture for a 20 to 50. That's such a narrow range to have a variable aperture on, and to have a 6.3 on a crop sensor at 50 mil. That's going to be terrible at nighttime, isn't it? So I'd expect this to be incredibly cheap, and cheap enough that they should just bundle it in with this new camera if they're releasing them both, which seems to be what they're going to do. So cheapo kit lens with a cheapo Fuji for only £1,100. I would say if you're looking at Fuji, just get the X-T4 second hand. It'll be about £700-800, and that'll be way better than any of this. So anyway, that's all the rumors. The news we've just got. We've got three news items to talk about. The first is Case. I'm guessing you're not familiar, Ted. Ian, I don't know if you are.
No.
Case spelled K-A-S-E.
Yeah, I've got their filters, yeah.
Oh, you
have? The magnetic ones, yeah.
Oh, you've got the same ones. Yeah, so they're a filter manufacturer. Very expensive filters, as I'm sure Ian will agree. They released a lens, which is quite odd for a filter manufacturer. Mm. And the first lens that they're releasing is an 85 1.4 full frame for Nikon Z and Sony E for £640. I think this is a bit of an odd choice for a first lens, because over the last 2 years, there's just been a massive flurry of 85 1.4 lenses, all of which are good. Some of them are meant to be outstanding, like the Viltrox, which is about £600. But even so, this will be cheaper than the Sony GM2 85, which is £1,200. That's half the price. But I would probably look at the Viltrox for a little bit less money, and probably a more secure bet in terms of optical quality. The only thing this does have as a unique selling point is it's got the magnetic ring built into the lens for their filters. I don't know if that's probably going to work very well for them, because most people that have these filters, they use step-up rings, and they're probably not going to have a filter that's going to fit this lens right off the bat. Do you use 82mm filters, Ian, like I do?
I the case ones I've got are actually 95, and I've got the step-down rings for those, so I have those, and I have some standard 82s and some grad filter ones as well, so
I'm guessing this will be a 67mm filter lens, filter thread on this lens, so that's probably going to cause more problems. You still have to screw in a step-up ring to it. But I don't know. What do you reckon, Ian, if you're looking at an 85 for your Z, Nikon Z? Would you be looking at a case? Or?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I've got the Holy Trinity anyway, so getting a prime for me would be just getting a 50mm or something like that. But I'm probably not well-versed enough photography of why I would need an 85, and for the stuff that I shoot, I don't think I'd get any value out of it, to be honest.
Yeah, you've got no primes at the moment.
No, I did. Oh. I think on the Sony, I did have a 50mm on the, when I had the Sonys, but I say at the moment I've got the wide angle, which is I think the 13-24. 24 to 70, 70 to 200. So for my ability, should I say, that's fine. As I say, I don't do any sort of portrait stuff. So I'm not sure where I would do that. And then I have enough problems trying to carry my kit around already. Yeah. So having another lens would be no. So, but.
I'm the same, to be honest. I've gone through a lot of primes, but I just ended up back on the Holy Trinity. I've got the f4 70-200 and 16-35, and I've got the 28 24-70, and I just don't really feel the need for anything else. I've tried them all. Tried the 35, the 85. I've got the 9mm at the moment, but that's just something a bit different. But
that's a super wide angle one.
That's that just would for be fun, really.
Something to play with. Yeah, definitely. So.
But anyway, moving on, the Sony 100 GM 2.8 macro that we spoke about last week was officially announced. I got the price bang on, I think, £1,400. I was sceptical about this GM badging because I feel like they've just been whacking that onto their lenses and charging double the price. But on this case, I think they've probably earned the price and that badge. The reviews I've seen saying edge-to-edge sharpness... the magnification at 1.4x, I don't know tons about macro, but I understand that just 1x is like the standard that you'll get on most macro lenses. This is 1.4, and it also accepts teleconverters, so you can go up to 2.8 with a 2x teleconverter. And the sample images I've looked are just absolutely amazing. I'm not a macro shooter, really, but if I was, I mean, I'd be all over this.
We could have a show all about macro shooting, because it's quite a big topic, and the whole what used to be, you know, one to one images on the sensor or the film, whatever it is only the only real true macro that
you can make more sense of this, Ted, with this 1.4.
Yeah, which I, as I say, we could have a whole show about it. We would need to deep dive it, because you need to also be a physicist to understand and work it all out. But macro is very interesting.
Shame Joe's not here. I'll be interested if he's got Mount Envy, because I know he's just bought a macro lens.
Yes,
but yeah, this looks like the sort of gold standard for the macro lenses now. So we'll see how that works out going forward. And last bit of news. So we've got a Kickstarter for an analog AF1 film camera. I'll actually have a look at this, Ted, because it's film. I don't know anything about film. But this seems to be quite a trendy announcement with the hipster crowd. So you'll be all over this, Ted, I guess.
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think the more that I hang out with you guys and we do this podcast, the more I'm thinking that film is not really an option. I like to think it is, but, you know, I think to some degree it's going to be left to the kind of Japanese teen market and the current buzz that takes into account, you know, film pocketable cameras and instant film cameras and cassette tape recorders and all that stuff that just goes round in cycles. And I'm not sure that it's got any legs, to be honest. I wish these people well, of course, if they're putting some money behind this. They seem to have quite a lot of backers, but £449 for an autofocus film camera, which you've then got to pay £20, £30, £40 per film to then go and get it developed. Well, to me, it just seems like it's, you know, you can say that one can approach it with a measured view and it can be. Anyway, this has got a fixed 35mm f2.8 lens, and the shutter speed can be adjusted from 4 seconds to 1/1000th. It's got a flash by the looks of it, and it's got a viewfinder, an optical viewfinder, but it's very basic. Automatic film loading and unloading and winding, which is kind of interesting, I suppose. It feels like it's something from the 1990s at this point, where they just kind of got autofocus on board and they've just got the film winding itself without a huge motor wind that they use in sports photography. It's powered on a wonky looking battery, which is just a mistake, I think. What is a CF123A battery? I've no idea, but you know, people are not going to be able to buy those in the corner shop, so that's a dead loss. Splash proof, but no dust proofing. And they're hoping to mass produce these things in December, and, you know, delivering to backers in the first quarter of next year. It just looks like a real lump, and I don't see any advantage. If you're going to make a film camera, it should be made on the scale of the Olympics, the Olympus XA, I reckon, which I know won't mean much to you, but it's a dinky little tiny front jeans pocketable film. You don't need it to be any bigger than that, and that means that people are going to carry it around with them. And if you're going to have a fixed focus lens anyway, then you can keep it small. I don't get this. Or, you know, take for example the Pentax 17, the film camera we spoke about last time, which I got confused with the Fuji X1 and the half. But, you know, again, that's a great big lump of a camera. Even if you were sold on this whole film idea in 2025, I just don't get why people would want to be doing this, except for novelty value. But I can't imagine that these people backing this and trying to raise money, they must know something about film and the drive for film photography that I don't know, because I just don't get it. And this analog AF1 is just too big and unwieldy, and I can't see it happening. Anyone else?
Blimey.
Well, you stay on the fence there, Ted.
I thought we were meant to be the people not in on film.
I think looking at the website, I think you can see where it's been designed for. Again, they're looking for that Fuji half market, aren't they? And you can see where they're positioning the people that they've got there, and I can't, unless they can get a lot of influencers behind it, I can't see it sort of taking off, to be honest. But you never know, it might be the the X100 for 2026.
Yeah, you never know. You go on TikTok and then all of a sudden you can't find one for less than £2,000 on eBay or something. So.
I won't be chasing it though.
No, definitely not. That's it. That's all the news this week. So not much to report.
Okay, on to the hot topic then. The hot topic. We're over an hour in at this point. So the hot topic will have to run us well over time. Ian, you suggested one. So do you want to lead away with it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've probably covered quite a bit on this when we were going through what we've been shooting. So ideally, it's like we all go out and take photos and we edit, we process, and then what do? I mean, there is this thing about sharing online or with friends, but as say, the number one for most people is they'll put it onto Instagram, and I think it's very depressing. Instagram, I think it's got a lot worse regarding one, the amount of adverts and the content that you're fed up on there. I agree that you wouldn't put things on Instagram for to get some honest feedback, but I think why I continue to post on Instagram is just so people have an idea of the type of photos I take if they're looking me up online or something like that. So I don't do it for any other reason apart from that. I don't know about you, Chris, from that perspective. I know you use a different posting. Let's say for me, I'll post to Instagram and that goes to Facebook, but it's just about getting a collection of work together rather than anything else.
I do have an Instagram. I do put my images on there, but I don't. I just literally just put posts. I don't write any hashtags or any descriptions, and literally zero people will see that image. The only reason I do is just because if someone says, you know, which has happened, you know, if I'm walking around, then I can go, oh, here you go, because everyone has Instagram and it's an easy way of showing people your work. But even my wife doesn't see the images, you know. They do not want people seeing photographs on Instagram. All they care about is adverts and reels. So if you go to the effort of doing a reel, I think you can get quite a lot of traction. A friend of mine sort of paid for you know, where you get the suggested thing, you pay like £20, and he ended up getting like 700 followers out of it. So it just goes to show all they care about is the money and, you know, feeding the algorithm and the videos. They don't care about actual photographers or still photography at all.
I at the start of this year, I was started putting some reels together. So this was before I was going to Melbourne and tried to drive the algorithm. And it does take a lot of work to try and build a reel with just even with your images. But I did find that you get, you don't get as many likes, but the amount of views and stuff you're getting is immense on those reels. But it's not something that I want to do. And sometimes you then think, well, it's taken me a long time to put this together. Okay, lots of people have seen it, but is it what I want to be doing? And I'm a photographer. I like taking pictures rather than, again, creating little videos. And say, there's no way I would go anywhere near TikTok or anything like that. So, I think it's, for me now, Instagram, as they say, is just putting images up so people can see my work. And that's about it. I mentioned about when I am shooting for motorsport, the agency work, that could end up online, but I know nothing about it. So, and again, only by chance that I find these things by sometimes Googling, and then you could see that they've sold some images online. But I have a website. I don't do massive amount with it. I did a lot with it last year. I did a charity thing last year called Prints for Dementia, which was selling prints by very popular motorsport photographers, and all the proceeds going to Dementia UK. So that was a very expensive thing to do for me, but it was a good learning curve of one, publishing the images, setting up a storefront for my for a separate website, Prince of Dementia, selling the images, printing them, framing them, and shipping them. So as an experience, it was good. It was very, very expensive to do, but it was quite a good learning curve. But to say that the website now, maybe a couple of images go on there, and I just started to have three or four images on there that I have for sale. But I don't openly massively do it because, say, that there isn't huge amounts of money in it. But it's quite interesting to see how many hits you get on the website if you post something online and see the amount of traffic that you get on there. But again, it's not a lot.
What about printing? Earlier on, Chris, you were talking about putting stuff on walls.
Yes. I do have a few prints up on the wall, but it is really expensive. That leads on to my... I also have a website and I do sell prints, but I charge 50 quid a time and I only make £23 on that. I mean, it costs using like a decent printer. It costs about 25 quid plus a bit of postage just to do a print. So it is an expensive business. So if you do a lot of printing, then yeah, it racks up quickly. So you have to be very circumspect about what you want to print.
But are people you sell them to, are they putting them on their wall? What are they doing with them?
I've no idea.
Okay.
They just, because I have put on my I have put the website in the show notes, and I put a little screenshot in the shared album what it looks like. It's no, I'm just looking at Ian's now. Sorry, that's why I was distracted. And it's way better looking than mine. My website is just cobbled together from a cheap sort of domain, you know, one of these people that sell websites, but it cost me about £6 a month.
See, mine is against, you're going to hate this, sponsored by Squarespace, but it's a Squarespace website. And it's, I think it's probably with the domain and the email, it's around £20 a month, I think,
yeah.
Maybe £17 a month. But yeah, it's something I've had for a few years.
That includes the marketplace stuff, so I had a good look around, and this place called Big Cartel, which is the one I use, it's just the cheapest way of having a website that can sell things. They have a free tier where you can sell like four or five things, but if you want to do more than that, then you have to pay the extra.
So when someone's bought it, you then send it off to the printing house.
And
the printing house myself. But whereas I see from the recording notes here, Ian, you've got a printer that you could do it yourself, can you?
Yes, and that works out even more expensive because...
that's not what I wanted to hear, because I'm hoping to hear about this printer.
So I did a huge amount of research. The Camera Cup competitions, they do PDIs as well as prints, so there was something on there. Again, I was done some exhibitions, so there was a need to print, so I went down that rabbit hole, and that's a whole new world regarding paper profiles and
ICC profiles
and wastage. Unless you enjoy doing, I mean, there's nothing better than you've taken a print and you've got something tangible in your hand and that you've created, that's the output, that's good. And I have a really good picture framers that I use, a company in Beccles, so they do the mounts as well. I mean, it's the mount and then the frames. But if you're looking at good quality frames, so I was using frames for an exhibition with non-reflective glass, and the frame for an A2 is about £70. So you can imagine what you potentially, even if you're selling a framed print with shipping for £120 or something like that, which is still an awful lot of money. It's like the photography thing. You've got to have a love for doing it. And this sense of achievement when something comes out. But I've got a spider that measures my monitor and the color profile on there, matching it all. So hopefully what I've got on screen looks like when it comes out on the printer. But it's a labor of love rather than a wise business decision, should I say.
I did look at getting a printer, but it just seemed like even more work than it is to get them printed by someone else, and that's enough work with all the paper. Yeah. And you need a profile for the printer and a profile for the paper. And
yeah, and then you've got to go through the different types of papers. And when I started off, everything was glossy photo and in your face, and went on to now fine art paper. I think I've got something that I'm happy with that looks good. But again, everything is expensive, and it's probably a lot cheaper. I mean, I used white wall when I first started off, and they're really, really, I found them really good for what they did for me. And yeah, nine times out of ten, what comes back is exceeding my expectations. So
we had great fun. In terms of the watching things happening in front of you in the dark room back in the day, that was just it was such a pleasure to go through all this in the dark room and get it all right and get all your chemicals. And then you've got a piece of paper in this liquid in front of you, and you watch it a bit like an instant camera, I suppose, with Polaroid. You watch it coming to life, and that is such a pleasurable experience. I think you're right, Ian. If you can get some pleasure at that end of it, out of it, then maybe some people will swallow the cost.
Yeah, I think for me, there is once a year, there's the Camera Club exhibition, which is essentially prints, but they're actually mounting them on foam board and then cutting them. Again, it's another labor of love to get something of quality. So for me, it's doing that bit as well. So it's again, the taking the shot is a third of it, the editing and getting it ready, and then the finishing is the final bit. So yeah, but as I say, if I was starting out and I didn't want to burn a lot of money, I wouldn't buy a printer.
So does that put you off, Chris?
A little bit, yeah. I've heard similar, to be honest, but it's such a lot of money to get a printer done, and then it's just one print, and I'd like to sort of print a lot of different images to see how they're going to come out. So it's you just kind of commit yourself to one image to print out.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted my own printer, just to sort of try out different images. But the printer's not cheap either, is it, Ian? Isn't it like £900 or something for a
A2 printer? I did so much research that it's either Canon or Epson, and for me, yeah, Epson was the one, and they got two models, the 700 and the 900. One's A3 plus and one's A2. I went for the slightly bigger one for A2 prints, because I think they look a lot better framed, because you're cropping into that part in the middle. So for me, the A2, it is quite big. The prints are expensive, but it's like your hobby. It's the price of a good lens, but you get a lot of enjoyment out of it as well. So there is a real sense of achievement when you do print off something that you're actually going to put on your own wall and stuff. I think is pretty cool.
We need to press on. We're running really long now. Chris, can you round things up, Chris, with what you put here?
Yeah, I just quickly mentioned that I do share to a few places, but I don't necessarily need the validation and praise, you know, from people I've never met. But it is nice, isn't it? You know, if you post a picture and you get a few people going, "Oh, that's amazing! That's a really nice photo." So yeah, I can't lie and say I don't like that. But at the same point, you know, if I knew that no one would see any of the pictures that I took, I would still be out there taking them. So I find some solace in that. I say Instagram's a total write-off, so we can forget about that. I do post a lot on Reddit. The Brighton Reddit is where I've sold most of my prints from. I think that makes sense, because people sort of see their own town. They'll see it in a way that they've probably not seen before, or they see it in a more artistic bent, so they can they're more engaged with those kind of images. So nearly all of my prints that I've sold have come from images that I've posted onto the Brighton Reddit. So that's been a sort of a good place for success for me, despite the odd drone wanker comment. It's generally positive. Another platform that I use is the one called Vero. This is one of the kind of anti-Instagram platforms that came out about 5 years ago. It's a photography-first platform. There's no algorithm. There's no adverts. I don't know how they make their money, to be honest, because there's no subscription and there's no tracking. All you get is a feed of the accounts you follow, and that's it. The downside of that is discovery is going to be a lot harder with no algorithm. But they have like these community hubs where a lot of people would follow them, and then they'll post picked images that they feature, and they've done that a lot for me, and I've picked up a few hundred sort of followers just from that. They also have sort of annual competitions, which I did come third in, and I won a couple of £100. I've entered. This was a photo of the Shard and the train, and it's a Photoshop edit of the blurred kind of surrounding that. So that was a really nice kind of validation, because Vero's, last I checked, I think has had about 6 million users. I'm sure not all of them entered the competition, but to get third place with such a large platform, I was sort of really, really happy with. And the other place, as I mentioned, is the website. I put all my favourite images onto the website, which is chrisclaytonphoto.co.uk. Buy your prints there, and that's it really, and not Facebook. I think I would do well if I did sort of hit the local Facebook groups. There's one called Brighton Skies, and there's one called Sussex Skies, which they have thousands of followers. I think I could do quite well on there, but I just really don't like Facebook. I don't have a Facebook account, so I've held off, but I'm kind of tempted to give it a go just to see if I can get any sales, but so far not yet. But yeah, that's it.
Okay,
question, Chris, and again, I don't want to make this even longer than it is, but I know if you guys this way go to local, I mean, I don't shoot local images, but they shoot pictures of the area and local cafes and things like that, where sometimes they let them use wall space to put their images up, yeah, especially if they're relevant. I don't know if that's something.
There is a lot
with the lanes and stuff.
Yeah, there is a lot of cafes, unsurprisingly, in Brighton that do that. But the trouble is you have to pay for the print and the framing. So if you pick up five images, you've got to spend, £500 to get into one of these places.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's why I haven't done it, just because of the investment. But a few people have mentioned that, so maybe I'll look into that one day. But it's just a lot of money to invest. So.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure how we got to an hour and a half with just the three of us, but we have. And we really need to cut this away now. And thank everyone for listening to this, and I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back in a fortnight's time with another show. Hopefully also some of the people that are missing today will be joining us from the team. Last reminders, tedsalmon.com/camera creations is where our website is. The MeWe group is where we scoop up information and stuff from what you're doing and your feedback and all the rest of that. So do head across there. If you get lost, then tedsalmon.com is where you'll find all the details. And yeah, that's about it. Sorry it's been so long, but hopefully you've enjoyed it and it's all been really good stuff. And we'll see you again in a fortnight's time. Cheers.
Bye.
Cheers all.